You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
We, as Republicans, as Democrats, as independents, as liberals and conservatives,
get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
If it was bad before today, I cannot believe how much worse it has gotten.
If we don't band together and protest, our democracy will be gone.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
And I'm freaked the frickin' frack out.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth, here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday. This is the Maggie Dawn Show, where it's always better when we stand together. Welcome, everyone. Again, an incredibly busy weekend of news. We're going to get to all of it today. Just to give you all a little flavor of what I got going on, at 3 o'clock, I'm going to be joined by a senior fellow from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Her name is Molly Weston Williamson. She is an expert on labor law, and we're going to specifically be talking about the threats to Social Security that the Trump administration poses. So Molly's going to join us at 3. I'm going to see if we've got time for my good friend Greg Gunderson out of Park Falls for a little bit of what's going on in your neck of the woods. But subject matter-wise today, ladies and gentlemen, we have to talk about the passing of Pope Francis, as well as what exactly he had to say yesterday when he briefly addressed nearly 35,000 people in the courtyard outside of St. Peter's Basilica for Easter, because I think the Pope's words yesterday are not new. They were clearly directed at the Trump administration. We'll talk about that. We are going to talk about Signalgate 2.0. Pete Hegseth apparently doesn't understand the most rudimentary rules of intel security. We're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about that in relation to a phenomenon which I am observing on a near daily basis coming from the Trump administration, which is massive screw up. And instead of saying you're sorry and fixing said screw up, it's double down on error, defend at all costs, and blame a whole bunch of other people for what is objectively your screw up. Seems to be a theme in the Trump administration. And if you never thought you'd hear the words Pete Hegseth and Harvard University in the same sentence together, I'm going to show you why those two bits of news have something in common over the weekend. But what I want to start with here, it's been a theme in the show because it is my belief as a lawyer, as someone who cares deeply about public policy, about due process, about the rule of law, it is my belief that what continues to go on a near daily basis, the actions and inaction of the Trump administration, pose a very significant and real threat to just the most basic fundamental rights that we all enjoy as Americans. So I want to start there. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court's 1 a.m. ruling Saturday morning and what brought it about, because it is really extraordinary. The ruling itself, I didn't think was that exceptional, the language of it, but that it was needed, what precipitated the need for a middle-of-the-night Supreme Court intervention in something other than a death penalty case, is pretty breathtaking, as was Justice Alito's dissent in that same case. And I'm going to tell you this. One of the things that you will hear me complain about as a lawyer all the time on this show is bad lawyering and bad judging. And it is my belief that judges especially have to take the greatest of care, as do government lawyers, to ensure that everything that they're doing is free of your personal political biases. We all have them. I worked as a government lawyer for a long time, and I've always had my own strongly held political beliefs, but I took great care to make sure that my judgments as an attorney working for taxpayers and residents of the jurisdictions I worked for, that those judgments were free from, as best as I could do, my political judgments. So let's start with what happened. Why did the Supreme Court need to issue a ruling at 1 o'clock on Saturday morning? Everything that we're talking about right here, there are many cases that are proceeding that relate to the deportations of individuals in this country, some legally here, some not legally here. The deportations occurring by the Trump administration under the Alien Enemies Act. And I want to be clear that we have yet to get a court ruling on whether or not the Trump administration is legally using the Alien Enemies Act to deport people. Remember, of course, that the Alien Enemies Act has only been invoked when the United States was actually at war in the past. It's never been, we don't have a declared war right now. So it's important to remember, not a single federal court has weighed in on whether or not the Trump administration's invocation of the Alien Enemies Act is actually valid or not. So all of the action that we've seen in these many cases, including the cases that have matriculated up to federal appeals courts as well as the Supreme Court, are only about the intermediary questions of what due process is required before you can deport someone under the Alien Enemies Act, even assuming that that's valid. Because again, we haven't gotten to a final determination by any court, let alone the Supreme Court, about whether or not the invocation of the AEA, the Alien Enemies Act, is valid. So all this action is only about, well, how, assuming it's valid that you can do that, what additional process, what additional procedures must the Trump administration provide? And how do people subject or potentially subject to deportation under the Alien Enemies Act, where do they have to file their cases to challenge their deportation? Can those cases be brought on behalf of a class of persons? What kind of claim needs to be made? But what has the one ruling that we have gotten from the Supreme Court directly with respect to every single person that Donald Trump would like to or attempt to deport under the Alien Enemies Act, what the Supreme Court has been clear, unequivocally clear about in a 9-0 ruling, even with Justices Thomas and Alito, is that due process must be provided to any person that Donald Trump is seeking to deport under the Alien Enemies Act. That was the 9-0 decision, days ago, a week ago. I forget when it was. Let's see. I might have a note here. I believe it was like 15 days ago, 13 days ago. Anyway, just a bit around 2 weeks ago. Here's what the Supreme Court said. Alien Enemies Act detainees must receive notice after the date of this Supreme Court order that they are subject to removal under the Alien Enemies Act. The notice must be afforded within a reasonable time and in such a manner as will allow them, meaning the people that are subject to potential deportation, as will allow them to actually seek habeas corpus relief in the proper venue before such removal occurs. Okay? So that decision came down on April 7th. since that date, and I'm going to forget about the contempt proceedings before Judge Boasberg for a minute, because those contempt proceedings relate to Judge Boasberg's orders related to this class of plaintiffs, and it was those his orders that eventually went up to the Supreme Court that generated this order, okay? So forget the contempt proceedings, but that's one of the cases. Then you've got the case of Kilmer Abrego Garcia, also about the Alien Enemies Act case, about one individual man who had a federal immigration judge order that said he shall not be deported. They call it withholding of deportation. And so what happened after the Supreme Court said 9-0 unanimously, not even a dissent from Alito or Thomas, that of course you have to give due process to these people before you deport them. And you have to give them notice that you're seeking to deport them so they can get that process. And that notice has to be provided so that they have a reasonable time, and it has to be provided in such a manner that they can actually seek that relief. They can avail themselves of their right to due process. So after that Supreme Court ruling on April 7th, a number of court cases were filed all over the country, wherever these people were being held. Because that's what the Supreme Court also required. You got to do it via habeas. The habeas has to be filed where the person is being kept in that federal district court, including filings in the Southern District of New York, the District of Colorado, and what becomes really important for this case over the weekend, the Southern District of Texas. In that filing by the ACLU after April 7th in the Southern District of Texas, the judge in that case barred the government, issued an injunction, a temporary restraining order, against the government that said you cannot remove the named plaintiffs in that action. Okay? And those specific named plaintiffs in that action were being held at the El Valle Detention Center. The other rulings from other district courts were also geographically specific, like about a particular detention center, a particular jurisdiction. So keep this idea of being geographically specific in your head, because what the Trump administration did next shows you that they have no intention of following these constitutional principles, this most fundamental constitutional principle, the one right that every democracy affords persons in its jurisdiction: due process. They have no intention of providing due process rights. And that, my friends, is violating not just district courts, but the very Supreme Court order itself on April 7th. I break it down more, as well as Justice Alito's dissent, when we come back right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network, where it's always better when we stand together talking about due process rights. The single most, in my opinion, important individual right in any democracy. It allows us to seek redress in a court. It allows us to say to the government, no, you can't lock me up. No, you can't take my property, without me being able to test and force you to prove up your allegations against me. Due process under our Constitution afforded to every single person that stands on American soil. You do not have to be a citizen. And the framers are very, very careful about that. Your very presence on American soil, even if you are here illegally, you are still entitled to due process. This past weekend, the Supreme Court had to issue an emergency order at 1 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. Why? Because the Trump administration has absolutely no intention of following the Constitution. The Supreme Court on April 7th, in a vote of 9-0, said, even if you can use the Alien Enemies Act right now to deport people, despite the fact that we have no declared war, there is no war, but even if you can use that, a legal question about which no court has yet to rule, you still have to provide people due process. After April 7th, the ACLU and other plaintiffs on the behalf of specific named individuals as well as groups of people filed subsequent lawsuits in the specific federal courts where a bunch of people potentially subject to deportation under the AEA were being held. And courts, in fact, the district court judges, the trial court judges, issued orders saying you can't deport these people, you can't deport these people. Most importantly, for our discussion this afternoon, in the Southern District of Texas, the ACLU filed exactly this lawsuit seeking to prevent deportations until people had hearings. And a Trump-appointed judge, Judge Fernando Rodriguez in the Southern District, entered the order saying the government can't deport anybody based on the administration's assertion that they are subject to removal. You still can't deport them. But it was specific. The guy in his ruling, Judge Rodriguez, said you can't disappear them from the El Valle Detention Center. So here's where it got real screwed up. People at the Blue Bonnet Detention Facility in the Northern District of Texas were then given notices of their imminent removal, like within hours, maybe. By the way, they spoke Spanish. The notices were in English. And the notices had no information about how they could challenge their noticed removal. So you get what happened there? Like, oh, there wasn't an order in the Northern District of Texas. There was only an order in the Southern District of Texas about this other detention center. So we'll deport them from a detention center in the Northern District of Texas. That's what's going on. Now, the ACLU already had a case going on in the Northern District of Texas on behalf of two specific people, as well as a class covering all of the people subject to possible deportation under the AEA at Blue Bonnet. So the ACLU had filed a lawsuit there. Now, in the Northern District, the judge had temporarily declined the ACLU's request for a restraining order to prevent the government from deporting anybody based on, and this happened over the weekend, based on the fact, not on the weekend, excuse me, it happened on late Friday, the judge said, no, I'm not going to grant a temporary restraining order to prevent the administration from deporting anybody because the government lawyer in his courtroom on Friday said that the named plaintiffs in that case were not about to be deported, or at least that's what has been the information that's been shared. Okay? And the judge reserved his ruling on the request for a temporary restraining order as to the overarching, the group, the class of potential deportees. So then news reports start leaking out late Friday that these people, despite the government lawyer's representations in court late Friday afternoon, were actually getting ready to be deported. So the ACLU rushes back into court late Thursday night, asks for emergency relief again from the trial court judge in the Northern District of Texas and from Judge Boasberg. And said, we just heard that they're putting people on buses and they're taking them to the airports. Like, this is about to happen. And sometime after 7 p.m. on Friday, Judge Boasberg said, the Supreme Court just told me I don't have jurisdiction, so I can't do anything for you. And Judge Hendricks said that although he had been trying to move very quickly because the ACLU had also filed emergency petitions late Friday with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. He couldn't do anything either. So that's how we got it to the Supreme Court. A government lawyer on Friday afternoon said, "Don't worry, Judge, you don't have to issue an emergency order keeping us from deporting people. We're not deporting anyone." And then what did the government do? Started the process to deport people. So what did the plaintiffs have to do? They had to run back into court to try to say they're actually doing the thing that they said they weren't going to do. And so a little bit before 1 a.m. on Saturday morning, the Supreme Court stepped in, issued a very basic one-page order that said the government is directed not to remove any member of the putative class of detainees from the United States until further order of this court. Holy cow. Now, all of this seems very technical. And after the bottom of the hour farm update, I'm going to take your questions. And we're going to talk about Alito's dissent together because we are in an extraordinary moment. And Judge Alito's dissent gives away the game. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Karina and Tim are next on the phone lines. You can be too. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. What do you think about the Trump administration spinning in the face of due process? Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is always better when we stand together. And we've got a couple of great callers on the line. You can join this discussion. We're talking about the Trump administration's daily flouting of due process rights. Every day, every single day, they are trying to get around doing what the Supreme Court and our Constitution has clearly said has to happen, which is even assuming you can deport people under the Alien Enemies Act, which is a dubious proposition at best, you still must provide due process. And the Trump administration is doing everything it can to not comply with that ruling. 855-752-4842. So the brief summary of what happened over the weekend, you have to go back to the Supreme Court saying 9-0. Yep. Even under the Alien Enemies Act, which we're not sure yet you can use to do this, you have to provide due process. April 7th, that was when that decision dropped. ACLU files cases all over the country because you have to now file a habeas case to stop the deportations, and it has to be brought in the district in which the detainee is being kept. They tried to get a temporary restraining order in the Northern District of Texas. One was not entered based upon a government attorney's representations that they weren't going to deport anyone. That turned out to be a big fat lie. And the Trump administration began, after they made that representation in court late on Friday, the Trump administration started bussing people around ostensibly to deport them. So there were more requests for emergency relief. And indeed, the Supreme Court stepped in at 1 a.m. on Saturday. And Justice Alito objected to the Supreme Court providing that emergency relief. I will get to that, but I want to take your calls. I'm going to bring in my colleague, Gray Gunderson, in just a moment to discuss this with me. Usually we do your neck of the woods. I'm going to call this everybody's neck of the woods because it matters to everybody here. Here's what I wanted. I just want to make these three observations. Then we're going to go to the phone lines. What do you think about this? 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. The fact that the Supreme Court did this was very significant. You can tell it was significant because the Supreme Court didn't wait for the Fifth Circuit to consider whether to grant emergency relief. And in fact, the court well knew that the Fifth Circuit hadn't ruled yet. They didn't care. They acted anyways. And they acted without getting any response from the government to the request for emergency relief that was filed by the ACLU in the Supreme Court. Like, oh my God, we're hearing that these people are on buses. They're about to be put on planes, like what happened before Judge Boasberg. Supreme Court, do something. And they did. Secondly, the Supreme Court, unlike its decision back in early April, didn't hide behind any technicalities or, you know, what does the word facilitate versus effectuate mean? They just said you can't remove these people. That tells you how serious, how urgent this is. And thirdly, the court was unsatisfied and did not rely on the factual representations made by the government's attorney late Friday in court. That lawyer, his name is Drew Ensign. He specifically stated on Friday afternoon that no planes would be leaving Friday. But he basically said, and likely Saturday, I've got the direct quote here. But he also reserved the right to change that. I mean, it was very wishy-washy. It was, you know, depends on what is. It was lawyering, to say the very least. So we'll talk a little bit about Alito's dissent in a second, but I wanted to get our very patient callers in. Karina from Milwaukee, welcome back to the show. What do you have to say?
Hello. Well, I have a question more than anything, because honestly, I'm a little bit, like, a lot confused. I understand due process, even if you're illegal in this country, it's
yep.
not about how you got here. It's about what kind of rules we have here. So it's not a respect to anything else but the rule of law on this land. So that's what it is. My confusion comes from everything I hear, and honestly, I didn't go and check on myself. I believe it's supposed to be a Maryland public like CCAP we have in Wisconsin. They saying that Garcia dude, who is a Maryland man, he did had 2 deportation orders, which he didn't follow. My question, is that considered to be a due process? I mean, practically twice. It does take some money and time from our tax money to do it. So how many times are we going? I mean,
I think, Karina, let me hop in. I understand what your question is. What has been misrepresented multiple times in the media and is not explained clearly is that Mr. Abrego Garcia entered the country illegally, and so he was subject to a removal process. In the course of that removal process, which, oh, by the way, started to occur because he self-reported and applied for asylum, there were intermediate decisions that were non-final that related to whether or not Mr. Abrego Garcia should be released, like on bail, except in deportation it's not bail, should be released pending his full asylum hearing. Okay, that's what it was. A trial court without testing the evidence, giving full faith so the evidence wasn't tested in court, that is not due process. Due process requires and necessitates cross-examination, challenging of evidence. No, what the court did is it just took police officers' hearsay about hearsay representations that an anonymous confidential informant said that he was a member of a gang. And a trial court said, on that basis, you're not going to be released pending your full asylum hearing. Okay, an appeals court upheld that. So he never had a removal order fully adjudicated that said remove him. That's thing one. When he finally did get his hearing, he wasn't granted asylum, but the judge did grant what's called withholding. The withholding of deportation, it's a different legal argument to get a withholding order that basically prevents the government from deporting him. So for Mr. Garcia, what happened was, on the basis of his status as someone who had originally entered illegally, he had a full hearing, and the court, that immigration judge, said he stays. Now, what the Trump administration is trying to do is use a different legal basis, the Alien Enemies Act, to deport him. That requires a different due process hearing to basically vacate the withholding order. You got to get that withholding order gone. You got to toss that. You got to challenge it. Oh, by the way, guess who was the president when that first withholding order for Mr. Garcia was put into place? Donald Trump. It was Trump 1.0. His government lawyers could have challenged that ruling. They didn't. So now they'd have to go back into court, vacate the withholding order, and then prove up the basis for his deportation under the Alien Enemies Act. Everybody with me? And yes, the wheels of justice are slow and expensive. Tim from Whitewater, thanks so much for your patience. What is your question or comment today?
Oh, so many questions here, and I think if I recall, you have a lawyer background, and this was gets you, as you probably know, why you're no longer a lawyer. What gets lawyers in trouble is because it becomes one of the things, like you said, what is. And I think what this comes down to is people have questions about what is due process, how does that apply? You've covered some of that. At the end of the day, most people in this country, I do believe the reason that Trump got elected was because people in this country did not like the complete, almost open borders that the Biden administration ran under. And so their question amongst many people is, well, where's the due process for the American citizens to just open up the borders? And that doesn't get brought up. And now everybody, you know, people on the left side are piling on, well, you got to protect this guy. And people who are voted for Trump are like, well, wait a minute. We wanted some processes in place here all along. I think this whole thing is going to take some time to work out. And again, people, most of us in the middle that kind of try to sort through all this stuff are just sick and tired of, with all due respect, all you damn lawyers messing with this stuff. You know, where was the due process of the American citizens when Biden opened up the border? There was no due process for the American citizens there. And people, you know, on the left side of the aisle.
So Tim, let me ask you a question. I'm not going to get into a discussion about whether Joe Biden opened the borders. I think that that's a gross generalization. I will agree with you that we have a problem having a functional, timely, and efficient immigration system. And we have a problem when we don't have a functional, timely, and efficient immigration system dealing appropriately and in a safe way with people who have come here illegally. Is that a fair place for you and I to start, Tim?
Fair, yeah, that is a fair place. And,
okay.
And then it comes down to another one of these, what is. What is asylum? Everybody claims asylum because word like is, frankly.
So the legal standards for asylum and the proof required are actually quite specific. That is why Mr. Garcia didn't get the grant of asylum. There are different legal standards defined in legal code for withholding orders. He met those. It is, in short, a reasonable and credible fear for one's life based on who you are, right? So your political beliefs, your religion, your race, whatever it is, a reasonable and credible fear for your life if you are returned to your country of origin. That's the standard for withholding. Asylum has higher standards. What I'm suggesting to you, Tim, is in a democracy, there are things like how are we going to close the border, a policy question, or what's the best way to do that? How do we improve our immigration system? And we should be able to have what I would call a hopefully nonpartisan discussion about what works and what doesn't. But what I'm going to call policy distinctions from what are individual rights that are guaranteed under our Constitution. And so we can have a policy debate as voters between you, Tim, and me, Maggie, about how do we fix our immigration system, keep our economy growing, and all those things. And then we have what the Constitution requires for each and every individual. And my argument has always been, it is only because of my love for each and every American that I get concerned when any government says, I am no longer bound by due process. Because if misidentifying someone and sending them on a plane to a foreign prison in contravention of a Supreme Court order is permitted under our Constitution, then you, Tim, the most material, real, everyday worry is not the unidentified person crossing the border illegally. It's the government that possesses way more power misidentifying you, Tim, and putting you on a plane. I think it's not here. I would say it's not a semantic distinction between what is the procedural stuff around this is. But the very idea that a government which will make mistakes no matter who's in power can simply take someone off the streets and send them to a foreign prison without any process. Do you agree, Tim, that that doesn't sound right?
That is questionable, but trust me, Democrats and liberals are going to lose this in the court of public opinion if you don't step up and start admitting and working with a process to have better regulated immigration.
Hang on, Tim. Would you grant me that that's what I said first? I began with that. And would you say to me that if you and I, people of good faith, stepped away from partisanship, what we both would be saying are two things that we each agree with. We have to do something about our immigration system, and due process rights are sacrosanct, and we both would stand together for both of those principles. What do you say, Tim? Can we do that?
Yeah. Let's see if we can get Biden elected again and have him start over on that.
Thanks so much, Tim from Whitewater. Your thoughts and mine coming up next. 855-752-4842. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What's up, everybody? Happy Monday. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show, where it's always better when we stand together, finding agreement where we can. We found some agreement with our good friend Tim from Whitewater that we can hold different thoughts and values in our head at the same time. We don't have to buy into at least what one party, I would argue, is the false choice. It is my belief, and Tim, again, thank you so much for calling and spending some time with me and all of you. Tim's saying, hey, it's a political loser argument for Democrats to be upset about these due process violations that are happening every day as the Trump administration thumbs its nose at the Supreme Court because people are legitimately worried about immigration. And my response to Tim was, can't we worry about both? Isn't the whole point of America that, like, yes, we can do complicated things like secure a border, make sure that people who are here off paper illegally who commit crimes are in fact deported. I support that. Serious crimes, especially. And we can respect due process. We can do both things. We're Americans, right? Like, let's do the complicated thing together. And I reject the false choice that either we have to strike due process from the Constitution and give up individual rights or have safety. That is a false choice. You can have safety and we can respect the fundamental right to due process that is essential for every functioning democracy. I want to bring on my colleague, Gray Gunderson, get your take, Gray, and then we're going to go to the phones. You can join Gray and I, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC.
That false dichotomy that you just pointed out, Maggie, that is something that I've seen more and more of recently, and it stands out to me the more I see it. And I think we have to look at that. We have to label it. We have to call it by its name. That false dichotomy, to me, is honestly, it's a putty knife for public opinion. That is the tool by which people are shaping opinion. I see it even, and I know it sounds ridiculous, but in the mindless dross of Facebook, there is a major thread I've seen. And it's my hometown comes to mind, not calling anybody out, but there's this trend I see in posts. How can we have a Pride Month when we don't have a Veterans Month? And it just, ¿por qué no los dos? Why can't we do both? And the the pretend, the little charade that we can't is something I can present to you to instill in you the idea that we can't have both, which is just a lie. It's just an outright lie by those who know.
And it's there's two things operating in tandem, Gray, which I would argue has actually been the backbone of the Republican Party's platform for nearly 30 years. One, it's the idea of these false dichotomies, these false choices, metastasized, catalyzed, exponentially grown through the idea of the world is zero sum, that if we provide due process to someone who's here illegally, that there's less due process and less safety for Americans. That's effectively what the Trump administration's argument is. If you provide due process, we're all less safe. That's a lie. We can do both. We can provide due process to people who are here illegally and improve our country's safety. We can do both. It is not zero sum. By having Pride Month or Black History Month doesn't mean that there's less love and respect available for your heritage or Veterans Month or whatever it is. And I'll add a third log to this fire. False choice, zero sum, and also the idea of false scarcity.
Oh, yeah. False shortages. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. It's the same thing that hops up when you talk. How dare we talk about socialized healthcare? Because all of a sudden, the time of the doctors and the obligations of doctors, like things that just aren't relevant until that topic is touched on. It's just, I feel like the same tool belt is being reached into and, oh, there's the same old tool. So let's grab them and see what we can do.
Because it works so well. You tell people that there's not enough, that if your neighbor does better, you do worse, right? And that you can only have this or the other thing. And gosh, we need safety and everything else makes me existentially afraid. You start to get xenophobia, racially based hatred, all kinds of isms. That machine works for certain people and not so well for others. Let's go to the phones. Charles from Milwaukee, you are on the air. Say hello to Gray. What's your thought?
Hello. Good show so far. So my two points. First, the issue with the border. Didn't start under Joe Biden.
Nope.
It's been an issue for probably over 35, 40 years.
Yep.
So it sucks that they try to blame Joe Biden for the crisis at the border. Second, I could have sworn, now correct me if I'm wrong, you two, Joe Biden and James Lankford had a deal set, and Donald Trump went to Speaker Mike Johnson and said, oh no.
And kill it.
To not pass this bill because I need something to run on.
Charles is 100% correct. So Republicans have been feeding a lie to you about you can have safety or due process. No, we can have both. They're feeding you a lie that the world is zero sum, that due process for someone who's here illegally means less safety or due process for you. That's a lie. The false scarcity idea, that's a lie. And here's the biggest lie, that Dems haven't tried to do anything about this. Lie, 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 lie. More people were deported on a monthly average basis under President Obama than they were under Trump 1. I mean, come on now. There was a bill that would have been the most concessions ever given by Democrats on the border that was on the table that could have been signed into law under President Joe Biden, and Trump killed it. That's what it's about. Joe from Madison, you're up next. Say hello to Gray. What are your thoughts, Joe?
Hi, Gray. Thanks for visiting. Good topic, good thoughts. And I wanted to return to what the previous caller was saying, and then also Tim from Whitewater. And I think it's really important that folks like Tim understand what this previous caller just said. I was looking at a headline to speak on the same matter of, wasn't there a bill, a bipartisan bill that was very conservative in nature that Biden was working very hard to get passed? And this headline just summed it up. It said, House votes down bill favored by conservatives. House votes down bill favored by conservatives. That's not...
That gives away the game right there. Gray, I'm going to talk about this a little bit more tomorrow. Maybe we can have you join me again. Because, folks, I was going to get to the Alito dissent today. I didn't have any time for it. But remember this, tomorrow, I'm going to tell you what the liberal bloc on the Wisconsin Supreme Court has in common with Justice Alito. Who knew? Keep it locked.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.